So I'm calling tonight's Dharma Talk, the Dharma of COVID Part Two. And for those of you who were here last week, I offered a Dharma Talk on the Dharma of COVID Part One, which if you're interested, you can soon you'll be able to listen to on Dharma Seed. So I contracted COVID 3 weeks ago and thought I'd offer this two-part series on applying Buddhist principles and practices to reflect on the experience of having this illness. And since we're all navigating COVID as a collective, hoping that some of these reflections may be helpful to you. And I just realized I should also introduce myself a little bit to those of you who I haven't gotten to meet yet, just a little bit more. So I'm Janine Skipper, and I have been sitting with this group since 2003 and teaching since 2016. It's a really special part of my life to connect with this community and to be able to offer some teachings. I'm also a professor of sociology at NAU, and I focus on environmental sociology and contemplative studies over there. And I have a lovely family. I'm very fortunate with three children and a beautiful husband. So, and I also feel really grateful for living on the edge of the Coconino Forest and getting to experience a lot of beautiful, just a beautiful forest that I feel very grateful for. So last week, I explored not problematizing our experiences and the possibilities for interrupting habitual fear-based patterns with mindfulness practices, specifically the fears that can come up during an illness, and very specifically during COVID, and working directly with the moment-to-moment experiences of illness. And so tonight's talk will continue from where I left off. And I'll be talking about two other kind of practices or insights that have arisen during my 3 weeks of COVID. One is about time for introspection, and the other is patience. And so I hope that some of this might be helpful to you all as you navigate illness, but it can also be navigating fear or frustration. I heard that as a common theme tonight, that many of you are entering this space with having experienced a lot of frustration. And a lot of these principles can be applied beyond the illness of COVID and into other elements of our experiences. So, as with last week, I just want to preface this by saying that the talk might be a little bit different than other talks, because I'm dealing with a lot of exhaustion and a little bit of trouble with breathing. There might be extended periods of silence throughout the talk as I need to take some breaks from talking. And I might turn off my audio and video at times. And so, just a reminder to stay in the present moment, be with your experience. If there's silence, that's really powerful moment. Just sit with whatever is, return to your breath, be present. So tonight I'll first talk about this time for introspection. Like when we're sick, or have some sort of an illness, we can't do all the typical day-to-day things that we would do. We may have to take breaks from work. We may not be able to go to work. If we if we are working or are attending to other daily life experiences, childcare, whatever it might be, when we're not feeling well, we find that we're compelled to take breaks. And I'm sure that many of you recognize that when you don't take those breaks and you do plow through, that sometimes the body will force you into a break. And I find that this is an opportunity for introspection, for this quiet space, and for examining beliefs and life patterns, stories that don't serve you. We're kind of given this break. And so this is a time where we can look at what are our patterns? What are some of the patterns in our lives that lead to suffering? And so there was nothing else to distract me from my thought patterns, so I had an opportunity to look at them straight on. And I find that that's really similar to what happens sometimes during extended periods of meditation and retreats, that we start to see these kind of mind-made patterns, and we can look at them. So for me, I had time to examine my beliefs around health and illness and the healing process. And I've been doing that throughout my adult life. But here I was again, face to face with some of my patterns, some of my fears that have come from childhood, the way that my parents see health and illness is really different than the way that I have come to see that in my life. But I still internalize some of those childhood beliefs. Some of those include, like, you know, messaging around me being specifically vulnerable to having extended prolonged illness. All kinds of little and big messages around my capacities for healing, my lack of trusting my own body to heal, maybe over-reliance on the medical model. And so here I was kind of face to face with a body that felt ill, and just exploring and introspecting on what were the thoughts telling me about this, and could I listen to my body's wisdom? So this became a practice. You know, listening to the body's wisdom for me was part of kind of it interrupting some old patterns. And so I asked this question: how do we cease feeding our habitual patterns? And for me, it's become pretty simple. It's a practice of just noticing what the pattern is, sometimes being able to name it, like we do with meditation sometimes. You know, labeling can be enough to sort of pop the bubble. And sometimes it's not. Sometimes just observing a pattern and naming it and acknowledging it isn't enough and to kind of interrupt the pattern, old patterns. So I've also found that setting intentions can recalibrate and release old patterns. We can set intentions in positive ways, to like not so much around like not to do something, but maybe to set a new pattern to do something else. So research has shown that it takes an average of 66 days before a new pattern, a new behavior becomes automatic. So you can set an intention and practice reminding yourself of that intention daily for about 2 months. They used to think it was 21 days, but the research has shifted on that. So go for two months to set new patterns. And so I have a practice when I'm trying to set an intention, set a new pattern. When I wake up in the morning, I have a number of practices that I do. And one of them is to remind myself what my intention is. And that's been a really useful tool. So just taking time for introspection, noticing the patterns. And if those patterns don't serve you, thinking about what practices might help interrupt those patterns so that you can be released from them. The other thing I wanted to talk about tonight is patience. And many in the West see patience as kind of a grin and bear it, having to be patient with not feeling well. Or what does it mean to be patient with feeling angry and just letting yourself feel angry? Or being patient with the process that you might have to go through if you have a pattern in life that's not serving you. It doesn't necessarily mean like embracing and accepting and not doing anything about it. Although embracing and accepting can be really important, but patience doesn't mean just sort of sitting in no action. It can be really active to have patience, and Buddhism sees patience as one of the paramis, the virtues that one perfects in order to awaken. So I'd like to explore four characteristics of the Buddhist approach to patience, and I'll do this in reference to COVID and my personal experiences right now. But again, I invite you to apply some of these in the ways that are meaningful to you right now in your lives. And so these four characteristics of the Buddha's approach or Buddhist approach to patience are that I'll be looking at tonight are gentle forbearance, accepting the truth, becoming curious about our experience, and loving presence. I'm going to just take a moment to breathe and rest about for a minute, and then I'll go into these four elements of patience. Gentle forbearance. This is the practice of replacing impatient reactivity to our circumstances with skillful action based in a commitment to do no harm. I'm going to say that again because that's a mouthful. Gentle forbearance is the practice of replacing impatient reactivity to our circumstances with skillful action based in a commitment to do no harm. So you can hear that term, action. Right? Patience has an active element. So we gently sit with the experience, just as we sit with the breath. Vipassana teacher Michelle McDonald wrote, "There is no need to focus on our expectations or attachments to results. Impatient thoughts come and go by themselves, just as the breath comes and goes by itself." So there's a movement. There's the watching, there's the gentle forbearance, there's the staying with, non-reactivity, non-judgment, skillful action to our experience as we're having it. So with COVID, by day 8, I found myself getting really impatient with exhaustion. I could feel myself sinking into self-pity, losing my sense of humor, and getting grouchy, and really just generally really wanting things to be different than they were. Gentle forbearance reminds me to step back, practice some non-reactivity, and that meant not lashing out to my family, and practicing self-compassion, which is also a very active practice. Just to kind of say a little bit about self-compassion, I find Kristen Neff's work on self-compassion to be really helpful. And that is just being mindful of whatever one's feeling, recognizing that we're not alone in that experience, that we share a common humanity. And so if we're feeling impatient with illness or whatever it might be, self-compassion, recognizing we're not alone in that. We have others that are experiencing the same very similar things to us, and that this is part of being human. And then another element of self-compassion is just being gentle with ourselves, of offering some gentle words to ourselves, treating ourselves like we would treat a dear friend. Right? What would you say to a friend who is struggling with whatever it is that they might be struggling with? Would you say like some of the stuff that might go through your own mind? Because some of us have some pretty negative self-talk, like, you know, oh, just get over it is a common phrase that I used to say to myself quite often. But I don't do that anymore, not with the practice of self-compassion. It's more like, you know, saying to myself, this too shall pass. And you can do this. We can do this together. Being there for yourself. So through this practice of gentle forbearance, and in time, the cloud of my impatience lifted and patience returned. Second element of patience that I wanted to look at is accepting the truth. We accept our experiences as they are. In Buddhism, Buddhist practices is just noticing, being with our experience. I like that word, being with. You know, sometimes we can get very heady and say like notice or observe. What does it mean to be with our experience? That brings in some of that, maybe that self-compassion and coming from a heart-centered space. So accepting and being with our experiences as they are, including our suffering, and not how we want them to be. I find this really powerful, to accept our suffering. You know, sometimes in Buddhism, we're, you know, Buddhism is about the practice of releasing ourselves from suffering. But sometimes, especially if we have many years of practice, we might think we're supposed to be good at this. And, you know, I've been practicing Vipassana meditation for 32 years, and I suffer. You know, I'm not free of suffering. And so there's now, over many years, part of my practice is to accept that when suffering is here too, it's here. And so a modern phrase for kind of accepting our experiences, it is what it is. Sometimes I find that to be a helpful mantra, kind of, it is what it is. Not idealizing how we should experience our illness, or as, you know, practiced Buddhists or people who have practiced meditation or whatever it might be, like we should have it down by now. Not pretending to be someone who we're not. We're elevated from these years of practice beyond suffering and so forth. Just accepting the truth of our experience, whatever it may look like. So that's accepting the truth. The third characteristic of patience that I thought I'd reflect on a little bit is becoming curious about our experience. So as we sit with the frustration, whatever it may be, allowing impatient thoughts to arise and pass, not reacting to them in an effort to release them, just not reacting to impatient thoughts, we can get curious about impatience. Like, what does impatience feel like in the body? What patterns of thought arise along with impatience? I always find that really fascinating. Like, we have these like incredible patterns and habits of mind, not to get too caught up in the analysis of it all, but just noticing like these patterns, there's these patterns of thought and getting curious about that. Oh, that's interesting that this pattern of thought arises along with impatience. What does this urge to quell the impatience feel like? You know, like, what does it feel like? Again, I return to the body. Like, when I get impatient with impatience, it's like, I want to get rid of this impatience. Right? And I feel like a heat in my body, you know, or like this, just like this shakiness, or, you know, wanting the, like all this movement. And you can get curious about it. And what does it feel like to simply sit with the discomfort? What is it? Getting curious about discomfort. This is not comfortable. Not escaping from it. Not wanting to, not being impatient with it. We have the toothache. One of our fellow participants here has. Sitting with the discomfort, we don't need to be kind of martyrs, or, you know, sometimes sitting with discomfort can be, can reach levels of pain that we don't necessarily need to have and need to experience. But if we are in some sort of discomfort, we can get curious about that. And the fourth characteristics of patience that I thought we could look at is loving presence. This question I find very helpful. It is, what would it mean to be a loving presence for whatever arises? And in this case of what I'm talking about right now, that's impatience. But you can ask that question of anything. What would it mean to be a loving presence for whatever arises? This can be a really powerful practice. Think about, what does it mean when you're a loving presence for another's suffering, right? You know, many of us, I suspect all of those who are here, have been loving presence for other people, probably often. But sometimes we have trouble being that for within. And we can tap into that loving presence and turn it inward toward ourselves. You know, somebody who's ill, who you've sat with, who you've held their hand, and you've just been with them, and how powerful that is for another person to be with that loving presence, your energy of presence. And what does it mean to turn that loving presence toward oneself? And again, this isn't like a thought. There's no answer to this. It's more like a practice, you know, seeing what it's like to tap into an energy of loving presence and turn that toward oneself. And so we can do that with patience, this virtue. You know, we can, that patient, part of patience is being a loving presence to oneself. It's a characteristic of patience. And so to kind of conclude, I don't want to give off the impression that I transcended COVID through these practices. That would not be true. Or the impression that I've always approached COVID with some sort of grace and ease. My husband, who also had COVID, can attest to the fact that I've gotten pretty grumpy and irritable, and I have not always been easy to be around. But when I apply some of the Buddhist teachings and bring the energy of mindfulness to the experience, I find that, just as with all of our life experiences, the illness provides fertile ground for introspection and openings for reducing suffering. And so with that, I'd like to invite you all to take a moment to stretch and, readjust if you need to. And in about 1 minute, I will ring a bell and we'll begin the sitting portion of tonight's sit. So thank you very much.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.